Welcome back, coaches, to the Talking Split podcast. Rob Calder joining you once again. The man shaking his shoulders at the moment. To my left, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Barbecue sauce, gold.
Zoe Carr, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
The drop is in your honour, of course, after your book club submission from last week.
Well, I've got an early story time if you want to go.
Right. Straight into it. I'm loving this.
We had All-State camp on the weekend and had multiple people comment on the barbecue cookbook. And all positive, thankfully. But I had one where I was just walking along a baseline and I'm not sure, obviously a coach or a parent, but somebody there that wasn't involved with the camp in an on-court perspective. So I'm just walking past and he just gives me the double pistols and goes, barbecue! And I thought, I've been called worse. So, yeah, it was... It was good. I'm glad people enjoyed it.
Excellent.
I think we're going to need the finger guns next week. Yeah.
Sadly, I haven't planned for that one. But we'll see what we can get in the future. Coops is checking in. No new manager at Sunderland yet?
No. Sticking with Mike Dodds. And we lost to Swansea 2-1. So, yeah, pretty...
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
There'll be a new one soon enough. Yep. Coaches out there, as always, great to have everyone in. If you're able to turn on the auto downloads on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, that would be fantastic, along with any ratings and reviews you're able to leave for the pod. If you can obviously share the pod, that would be fantastic with any other coaches out there. Just to have some more interaction would be phenomenal on our end too, mainly because the topic we spoke about last week and this week is a listener submission. So if we can get tailored information to you in that world, fantastic. We can only do that if people listen to the podcast in the first place, the ultimate catch 22. You can follow along with the Talking Split handle on Instagram and on X as well. That would be fantastic. Reminder, coach shout-outs. If you want to send a message of gratitude to your coach, that would be fantastic. We'll put it on the podcast for you. Just shoot them in via direct messages on any of the socials, or you can send me an email with that. Anytime we can show some coaches some love, that would be fantastic in this world as well. Book club, we spoke about it already. Zoe's done. Coops is on the clock for later on. Once again, though, coaches, if you have anything you've read recently you think would be a great submission for the book club, record yourself talking about the book. Obviously, put the book name in there. A little bit of a review, what you liked, what your takeaways would be. That would be fantastic. Bit of a reminder, Mike Dunlap Coaching Clinic. That'll be at Mullum Stadium on March the 18th from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. You don't need to click the link. I'm telling you when and where it is so you can attend the clinic on that one. That's a really easy one. Mike Dunlap, as we all know, massive amount of history tied in with Australian basketball in that space. So head coach of the Adelaide 36ers previously in the NBL. He's been the head coach at Metro State. There have been so many Australians go through Metro State. The college system over there has been out of control. Dave Barlow was a Metro State. Luke Kendall was a Metro State. Mitch McCarron, Metro State. So obviously has a great connection in with the Australian scene. But of course, an NBA head coach as well, which doesn't come along every day. The Charlotte Bobcats, that era, I suppose. They're now the Hornets again. I like the rebrand back personally. Mm-hmm. But obviously... a great friend to Australian basketball. So big thanks to Basketball Australia for getting Coach Dunlap out here. But it'll be a fantastic opportunity for a lot of coaches to be able to get along and see what he's teaching in that space as well. Appreciate both of you jumping into this pod after All-State camp. I know you're both probably bleary-eyed and a bit fatigued at the moment. How was camp, Zoe? So talking about the girls were on second, but what were the big points of emphasis for the camp from you going into it, and what are the points coming out of it?
So we had a big emphasis on our split kick extra, even though that's a staple of our program. We always want to have a touch point of it at every camp or every time we touch the floor. But having a bit more of an emphasis on the secondary cuts off those receiver spots, so making sure that our feet aren't just nailed to the ground, and that if defense turns their head, we want to punish that by trying to get on the rim and all those sort of things. And then for the girls in particular, it was about removing re-penetration. So we see a lot on a Friday night, even domestic, all those sort of things, because it works, that, you know, we get a split, we get a kick, and then we re-penetrate back into the jungle and, you know, try and score over two or three. So trying to build that confidence of if that kick comes and it's open, you've got to shoot it, or the extra you can then penetrate again on the extra. But if that's open, shoot it. People are predictable, shots are reboundable. So you know, if we're getting into that habit rather than just going to that washing machine and continually driving on the rim. We had an emphasis on our full court matchup defense and our rules that go with that, as well as in defensive transition, our transition running, so trying to remove the buddy running, which we have a bit of, and trying to get them out wide, trying to get them comfortable with owning corners and then bouncing back, and the understanding of, you know, if you do your work and you sprint to the and you own those corners, if the aim for that is to allow the ball handler the space to try and penetrate and get feet in the paint, but if they can't do that, well then you've got to come back, because we're getting to the corners, but then we're just standing there. So it's sort of just trying to level up a little bit on each of the things that we've been doing over the course of the last couple of blocks. And then there was a lot of, I guess, detailing on our system, both early and delay, and just breaking down the concepts within it and the screening actions and how to defend those screening actions so we can make the offense better. And, yeah, then it was a lot of free play. We started with free play, which I think was awesome. That really brought a lot of juice. And across the girls' day, I think for us, overall, it was the best camp in terms of sustained intensity that we've had. So I was pumped with the girls' effort and the coaches' effort, and what we're able. I think we left that stadium better than we arrived. So that's pretty much a big tick for me.
Yep, fantastic. What about on the boys' side, Coops?
Yeah, really good camp. High functioning. Athletes and coaches engaged. You know, understanding what we were trying to achieve out of it. It looked like basketball, which is great. There's a level of comfort in understanding the system now and in understanding what we're trying to do as a program. But the funny part of that is there's also now a level of comfort, you know, that's impacted practice habits, that's allowed Friday night bad habits to creep back in. And so for us, again, the free play was good. It, you know, we saw system execution. We saw the guys understanding, you know, what we were trying to do and put themselves in positions to succeed. But then, you know, here came the Friday night collapsing defense. Here came the Friday night stand and ball watch into re-penetration. So we had similar issues to the girls' side. But to look at it and especially start with that free play and feel like we were already, you know, on the second floor and we could coach detail and we could really get after the guys about their practice habits and creating the right environment meant that it was a big step forward for us and, an exciting camp to come away from.
I think one of the best things that I really enjoyed too from that camp is we only planned one session plan. So then we were able to watch those free play, especially the free play at the start, watch throughout, then come together in our break and, okay, what do we need to hit on again? What can we potentially move on from, or, you know, those sort of things. So the boys and the girls session plans from the first session were the same, but the second session were very different because we had to work on different things. And I think the best part about that is, you know, I always bleat on, Coops hears me all the time talking about, you know, we often make jacks of all trades and masters of none. And I think so having that approach of, you know, we're aligned and we're doing the same sort of things to begin with. Now, what does our program need? What does your program need? And so now we can, you know, actually tailor things to get them better rather than something that we need as a girls program that the boys potentially don't, or vice versa.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's a difficult camp to coach at as well for a lot of coaches coming into it because they're obviously teaching something that's not theirs. It's really easy when you know what your offense and what your defense is, but it's an opportunity for coaches to learn from other coaches as well, network and those types of things. Did you have any problems with coaches kind of forgetting that, I suppose, at times, where they'd not necessarily take the teaching points given at the start and then you get into gameplay and it's not quite the same? Like, how do you approach that if that does happen?
Probably more so a bit of timidness.
100%.
By coaches that were potentially a little bit overwhelmed in seeing the information delivered seeing the points of emphasis and then seeing our lead coaches be able to, you know, have a quiet eye, see the whole game, pick up things, coach on the run, you know, bring their language back to our language to keep it consistent. And that's what elite coaching is all about. And so we did have a number of coaches kind of just step back and be a little bit quiet, maybe miss some things because you can see they just, you know, they didn't want to overstep. They didn't want to get it wrong, which is totally understandable.
Yeah, you know, not a bad thing, Bonnie. Yeah. It's like that's the idea behind the camp and you come in, you get that feedback, you get that support, you get the information. Now you've got to go and apply it.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. So that's, I think, the good side of the camp from a coach development perspective too is that you have coaches that – may not work with that level of athlete regularly. They might have one or two SDP type kids in their team, but they don't have a team full of them when they have to get into the scrimmages. Those types of things, it's nice to be able to, it's a great entry point.
Well, and that's where I have to give a massive shout out to our hub leads. Our hub leads were fantastic. They, yeah. You know, particularly on our day. So we had, Jenna was a bit unwell. I wasn't completely well. And so they really stepped up, but they stepped up holistically. So they stepped up. Some of them had to take run courts. Some of them got around and helped coaches or, you know, just gave them that little bit of feedback or that little push if they needed it. And also from an on-court perspective, like the girls, the country girls and the metro girls, our first drill was free play up and down the floor, and they stepped onto the floor and their shape in the system was great and their understanding was great. They were able to come together as one unit, and that's a credit to the work they've been doing at the hub. So was really impressed with that and their work throughout the day.
Excellent. So it sounds like a good one. Do you guys have another All-State camp this year?
We do. Yeah, we got our BV one. Is in July, so after 16 nationals. And that one will be a little bit different because the boys and the girls will be on the same day in different venues. And then we also have a Country Vic one coming up, and I think the Metro guys have one coming up as well. So it'll be great to get everybody back in the gym and get another touch point.
What was really cool, though, was we were on a Sunday, and the amount of coaches that have given up their VJBL practice to come to be a part of the camp was huge. So again, another shout out, but it was massive. We had, I think, 35 coaches plus hub leads in the room. So really impressive, and a big thank you to all those coaches.
Definitely. Coaches, if you are interested in attending those in the future, please just drop us an email and we'll put you in touch with the right people on that. I know an email went out to the directors of coaching last week about some of the Metro team sessions that are going to go on coming up, I'll say, towards the back end of March. Again, if you have interest in attending those, I think they're on a Monday or a Wednesday night out at Mulla Mulla. If you have interest in attending, just shoot us an email. I'll get you all the dates and all the information. And you're more than welcome to attend and do as much as you want with that. And, you know, if you want to sit in the stands and just observe, that's fine. If you want to shadow one of the coaches, that's not a problem as well. Great opportunities to learn and develop that doesn't involve you sitting in a classroom or anything like that. I understand the differences between the two, and I do sit in classrooms and deliver content and those types of things, but it is a different form where you get to work with players as well, which I think is really the fun stuff that we don't necessarily get to do enough of at times. We get caught up in the admin world and making sure everything else is okay, and we forget about the actual coaching.
And maybe we could have our coach education manager next year.
Maybe. If I'm not presenting, I'm more than happy to come. That's fine. I've spent my – how's this, though? So, as we all know, mandatory accreditation is in, so we've had to run a lot of courses of late, in particular at association-level course, and I'm very conscious that your workload has been heavy, so I've left you two alone largely to present that one, so it's been me. I reckon I've picked the best three weathered Sundays in a row to punch out that course at State Basketball Centre. Like, it's been – I've turned around at times when I've been talking to the TV. I'll turn around bright and sunny. It's like, yeah, sorry, everyone. Like, this is my bad. It's – you know, the ones where it's raining sideways and it's about 4 degrees, you don't mind bringing everyone inside. It's like, what else would you be doing? This is not a problem. It's like, yeah, you could be like paddling the bay like Warren Brown does. Like, it's all that sort of stuff that it's like, yeah, sorry, everyone. It's just kind of how it rolls at times. But we'll see how we go with the schedule in particular. We're back on to the same topic as we had last week in the preparation in particular for our players for games and understanding the mental side of it for them. We had some great questions come through last week, or based on last week, and we've got the rest of the questions that we didn't get through last week because we spoke too long about barbecuing and those types of things, which is okay too. Not bad. Like, put it out there, definitely not bad. One of the questions we did get, and we, to be honest, I get this one quite a bit from coaches, is how do you get your players to stop reacting to referee calls? And the easy answer that everyone goes to is, oh, just bench them. We know it's not that easy. It's always going to happen. It doesn't matter if the call is right or wrong, there is always going to be a reaction of some sort. How, Coops, do you get your players to just take a beat, not have that insane reaction where it blows up and they're, you know, chasing referees around and yelling abuse?
Stoicism.
Oh, here we go. I feel like we might be foreshadowing a touch here.
No, it's about, you know, it's about talking about it prior to the event. It's about providing some strategies prior to the event, because what happens too often is we're saying that after the fact. So it's like, oh, how do I stop them doing that? Why? Because that probably happened on Friday, and then in the moment you didn't know what to do and then you just benched them anyway. So maybe the next training session, 15 minutes prior to the session, we sit down and we talk about, okay, how do we build a resilient mind? You know, how do we understand that referees are humans too and they make mistakes? How do we better control our emotions through understanding of what things are inside of our control and outside of our control? One of the best things to do is to reconnect with the breath. So if there's at minimum a strategy, it's taking a breath, or it's counting to three, or it's counting to 10. There's something in there that's going to help each athlete and coaches better deal with those scenarios. But it can't just be this, after the fact scenario. It's got to be some planning. It's got to be some dialogue. It's got to be some strategies before the event.
And we know some players are talkers anyway. So then it's not always coming from I'm yelling abuse or anything like that. Sometimes they're trying to get into the ref's head a little bit. It's like, oh, geez, it might be a bit unlucky on that one. Like, you know, did you miss the hook before? That's okay. No worries. You'll get the next one. Don't stress about it. Well, we know those types of players are out there. And, you know, sometimes, to be fair, they can be quite funny with it. But it is one of those areas where I think you have to address it with your team early on. Because if it's one of those things where it's like, oh, look, I think we'll be okay. We'll see how it goes. It's exactly what you're talking about, Coops. You'll only end up addressing it after the fact, where something's already happened and it's potentially cost you down the road.
Yeah, right, exactly. I've got an athlete in one of my teams who's just an outstanding young man who I've got a great relationship with, and he's got a real competitive streak, which has come out in some negative ways in the past. And one of the things that we talk about a lot, and we talk about it, you know, at the hotel or in the locker room, though, you know, those places, again, prior to getting out on the floor, is, you know, just how infectious his smile is and how infectious his character is and how what a positive influence he can be and how much fun basketball is. And so if we're playing and I see him start to kind of veer towards that competitive streak, whether it's a referee or an opponent or whatever it may be, I'll just yell out to him and make sure he looks me in the eye, and then I'll just like shine a big smile, and he always smiles back, and you can see it just get diffused like in that moment. And that's obviously something that him and I have created, again, prior to the event.
Yeah, I mean, you can use buzzwords and yep. those types of things, yep. like just to recenter yourself, I suppose, more than anything else. I know as a coach, like, we've all reacted to referee calls and those types of things, and you do have to. I used to coach with like a stress ball, and it's like it'd just sort of sit in my pocket, and every time something would go wrong, you'd sort of grab the stress ball a couple of times. It's like, this is maybe not the greatest perception to give to my players out there, that I'm going to be constantly stressed by what's going on. So it sort of came from an area from my end too, where it's like, well, okay, if that's going to be the case, just that like touch meditation type stuff. So it's like touch your thumb to each of your fingers mm-hmm. down and then back again, and just kind of reground you a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you wander off and you do your thing. But just that taking a breath, I suppose, helps. How have you gone about it? Are you any different?
Well, all the strategies Coops has mentioned are the most important, that you're going to get the most out of those. I think also what you need to do as well, especially if you're working with an athlete who, like, you're not going to go from a reactionary athlete, have that conversation, and then they'll be 100% great at it. Yeah. Like, it takes work. Yep. And we talk about how we need to put kids in game situations in practice so they've seen it before. Same thing. Call rubbish calls on them at practice and then help them to train them into how to react, not react, etc. So then when it gets into a game, they've been there before, they've seen it before, they've done it before. So it's a, you know, it's not just as simple as just talking about it. You've got to then put them into that situation. So then they know when they get into that game, or if you need to reference it, that they've been there before and they can do it. And it's not, because one of the things you'll often have with young athletes is similar to when you start teaching them to shoot with their left hand. Like, well, I can't hit the ring. Well, you can, but you're just not, because you're not doing it. Like, you're not using your power from your legs and you're not doing all this sort of stuff. They'll tell you they can't do it. So being able to show them that they can in a safer environment, I think goes a long way into them being able to transfer that into gameplay.
Well, it's that instant reaction after a call that usually is the blow up. And like I know, learning from another coach that I'd spent some time with way early in my coaching, they were really good at getting the players' attention straight after the call. Mm-hmm. And just like call them over straight away, talk to them before they have a chance to talk to someone else, which can cause the problems in that world. Because we know if we leave them to their own devices, some deal with it really well, some do struggle with it, to be fair to say. So their thing was, look, the second you see the reaction, get them to you as quickly as you possibly can. You talk to them, so that way they're not talking to the ref on that sort of thing. Just rebalance them and throw them back out there. And you kind of hope for the best a little bit that they don't happen to walk past the ref at the wrong time. But it is, like, I mean, you spoke about it, Coops. The difference between like just smiling and just going, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, I don't need to deal with this, so to speak, versus the blow-up. Like, they're the hard ones. We love the competitive drive with our players. Like, man, let's face it, I think we'd all like a little bit more at times from some of our players. But it is that crossing over between are you now so enraged to do something well that you're going to potentially foul again, which we know happens quite regularly. How many times have you seen like 2 fouls in 30 seconds, which causes massive problems with not just rotations, but you know, everything else. But the using it for good, it's that kind of thing. How can we refocus them so that they can direct their energy in a positive fashion rather than getting hung up on it? And it's difficult. When players come to you and say, hey, I'm getting fouled and they're not getting a call, what am I supposed to do? There's only so many times you can say, hey, you'll be right. You know, play through it. It'll turn, those types of things. But for mine, it's get back to the teaching points. It's like, well, if you feel like you're getting fouled on your way to the bucket, start playing off 2 feet a little bit more and play through the contact so that you'll be okay. Those types of things.
It also starts with us. Yep. And first to admit, not great at this. Yep. Because I'm reactionary too, because I am so competitive, it's borderline psychotic. But
that border is not very thick, as it turns out. passport Rob control required. Just
Rob and I will be walking upstairs and we'll get towards the top and I'll start looking out the corner of my eye and have to get to the top. It's ridiculous. Anyway.
Often losers too.
Yeah, I never lose, come on. But it starts with us. So if a call is made and we slump our shoulders or we, you know, make comments or we start yelling out, they're going to do the exact same thing because they're going to mirror your behavior and your feelings, and they're going to, they're not silly. They pick up on all that sort of stuff. So they'll do exactly the same. So our consistency in what's next is just as important. But we also need to understand that there is a line where, as coaches, unless we're trained, there's probably things we can't fix and may require somebody qualified to be able to help. And if the athlete's serious about trying to progress throughout the pathway, then they may need to go and speak to someone who can give them some more ironclad strategies that can help them. But make sure you're engaged with that too, because it can be something then you can help them with as well. So if you know what those strategies are, you can, you know, help guide them back to it if they're getting a little bit lost or whatever. But sometimes we have to admit that we don't know everything and we have to find some people and guide them towards people.
Well, use of film, I can't believe I've jumped on this before you have, Coos, but it's one of those things where can you show the player back what they look like when they did this, and it's like, hey, you lost control here. Like, this is when we lost you for 3 or 4 minutes because you were still focusing on something that had happened 5 or 6 minutes ago, but we lost you in this period here where you took two bad shots, you threw a turnover trying to be the all-world passer, those types of things. It impacts on the players' game. Like we know it does. Oh, so yeah. Even showing them back, hey, do you think this is a good reaction? They usually look fairly sheepish, and it's like, nah, it's not a good look, is it? It's like, yeah, right. So you know, what would your parents think of that? What would your younger brother or sister think of that? What would your grandparents think if they saw that? They go, oh, yeah, it's not a great look, is it? No, okay, good. As long as we're fine, like, we'll move on and we'll see how we go with it. So I think it is one of those areas that not every player is wired the same. We know there are terminal whinges as part of our playing cohort that it's like, look, no matter what happens, that could be the 100% right call. They're still going to complain about it. Those ones we probably don't need to worry about quite so much because it's almost part of their DNA and personality. But the ones that can blow up really quickly, those ones we do have to be a little bit careful with, obviously. One of the other parts, being intimidated by someone that's achieved more. So you're coming into a game. You know that your matchup is someone that has potentially been involved with SDP, made state teams, represented at a higher level, those types of things. And you start to get a little nervous about that's your matchup. So Zoe, what are the things that you would be giving or the tools that you would give to that player to just be prepared for that?
Yeah, I think something that's really important is everybody's human. Everyone bleeds the same way and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So just because they've achieved something doesn't mean they're not capable of being beaten. You've just got to be smart about how you do it. So every player that comes up against somebody like that, like I know in Siebel a million years ago, I had to play against Lauren Jackson. She came back and played one game for Albury against us. Thanks. But had to play against her. And so my strategy was, right, get okay with the fact she's probably going to score big. Like, it's going to happen. Get okay with it now. How can I make it difficult? How can I impact the game so, yes, she scores big, but nobody else does? What can I do to find a way to not aggravate her, as in, like, be dirty or anything like that, but just make it that she's thinking about me and what I'm doing? So what tends to happen is we get so them focused that we forget about us. So it's like, how can I attack her at the other end to make her have to defend me to then, you know, maybe help stem the other end and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it was a real sort of process. She ended up having 40 and I was like in a coma for 2 days, but sometimes for younger, because I was obviously a senior basketballer at that stage, for younger athletes, I think sometimes we put it in their heads, that it's a big deal. I think sometimes, you know, oh, when we talk to them about, oh, you know, you're matched up on Nathan Cooper Brown and, you know, you've got to do this and you've got to do that and you've got to. So now all of a sudden we're creating this anxiety for them. Like you mentioned in the pod last week about the little under 12 that missed the free throws that lost the game and he could not care because he was buying a fish. So it's like
6 years later, I still remember it though.
But it's one of those things. But I think it's worth asking the question of, hey, how are you feeling about tonight, or how are you feeling about Friday or Saturday or whatever day? And then if they come back with, oh, I've got to, you know, play against Coops, well, now you can say, hey, here's the things you can do that will help you be successful. They are talented. They have done a fair bit. They are talented. We can't take that away. But what we can do is try and stem that in the best way possible. So these are the ways that this is how you force them to do things they don't want to do. And get okay with the fact they're going to score. Get okay with that. You'll be fine. But if we can make this, again, like I said before, if we can make it difficult, we as a team go a long way to winning. And ultimately, the win for the team is more important than the 1v1 battle against this player that's done all these amazing things. So, yeah, I think just tiptoe first and find out if they do actually care or not. And if they don't, leave them that way. Like, let them live in the land of bliss. Obviously, once you start to get to sort of 18s and things like that, and you start talking scout and stuff, then you've probably got to intervene a little bit more. But if they're younger, just sort of let them go a little bit.
And you've got to remember what's real and what's not real too. Like we've all seen the mixtapes that are out there, and honestly, you can put together a mixtape on anyone. Like you could walk into the BV office now and see someone photocopying and then flex afterwards and say, hey, this will go on your reel with you know, how it would look. It's so much myth and just bluff and bluster and that sort of stuff. Like you see it all the time with, oh, they make this ridiculous shot. Yeah, but they've missed five before that. Like they're not putting the misses up there. They're only putting the makes up there. So you can get in your own head.
Well,
I feel like a lot.
Within the game, if you know, you've done a great job and you see it and then eventually they score something incredible, you know, as coaches, you've got to intervene quickly and it's got to be, hey, we're okay with that. Like that's the shot we want her to take or him to take. We'll wear that, you know, and let them know that, you know, you're with them and they're still doing a great job and all those sort of things because it is difficult because kids are more, especially as they're older, more self-aware of who they're coming up against and what they've done, then social media definitely doesn't help.
Yeah, I remember, I can't remember who exactly, but it was one of the NBA guys was talking about getting put on a poster. Like he challenged a shot, got dunked on, and he's like, yeah, so what? It's my job. Like my job is to go and challenge that shot, and if they get it, great, but if
and
they
I'm
don't, whatever.
Cool.
Like, you know, I'm sure they cried themselves to sleep at night on their $1 million mattress, but it was one of those things where it's like, well, that's my job to go and challenge that. If they make it, well, so be it. But there are going to be times where they don't, and I'm going to be the reason they don't. So we're good. It doesn't really matter. What about you, Coos? Have you sort of seen anything that's worked well in that space?
Yeah, I think building on what you're talking about, which is just trying to shift the mindset a little bit and embrace the challenge. And most of the players that we deal with are pretty competitive. Obviously, they get more competitive, you know, the higher we go. But to try and reframe that mindset about not that I have to guard that player, I get to guard that player. And that why would we want it easy? Why would I want to go to a game where I'm going to guard the pleb all night and not really have to do anything? You know, if I'm having to guard that player and watching a teammate guard the best player, I'd be fuming. I want that matchup. I want to be playing against the best player that I can every single time on the floor because I know they're going to get me better. It's going to be more enjoyable. This is why I'm here. So I think if you can quickly kind of get into that headspace, we're going to be able to tap into that intrinsic motivation that's already there.
And it's a bit of a checkpoint too. It's like, well, if this is the perceived best player in the age group by whoever, we'll find out where you're at.
Yeah.
Like, this is an opportunity for you to now measure yourself against that. And look, we've all had teams, I think, in the past where we've had kids on our group that we sort of feel like, geez, maybe they should have made that team ahead of that player. You get to play them one night and you almost just wind them up a little bit. And it's like, hey, that's the kid that's got your spot. Just remember that. And away you go. It's that
but
kind of
do
thing.
But you do have to be careful.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
We've all seen in the Ted Lasso season 3. No. When the when they show him the video of Nate ripping – spoiler alert.
you haven't seen it by now. We can't help.
Yeah, this is not the pod for you.
Ripping the believe sign. And so then and they thought it would motivate them to, you know, work harder and be better, and all it did was make them come out and, you know, hit people and you know, so it gave them motivation but just in the wrong way. And so it's really important you find that balance. But I think the point you made, Coops, is awesome because it should be a case of, and it's something I said to the girls at camp on the weekend, don't take things like go up and play against these best players and don't take it as a sign of, oh, I'm terrible because they beat you. Take it as a sign, okay, I need to work on A, B, and C.
Yeah.
Write it down in your journal.
Yeah.
Find your coach, find your mentor, find whoever it is and go and work on it. And then if you happen to play them again in the season, be like, coach, that's my matchup. And measure yourself on that. And
well,
that's how you get better.
It's understanding why it's happened too. Have you been scored on because that's part of the other team's offense to score this way to get that shot for this player? In which case, well, it may not be anything that you can really control other than your defensive scheme around that, which probably isn't on you anyway. If it's something like you've closed out poorly, they've stuck a shot, you've closed out poorly again, they've driven past you, well, now you've got to start looking at, well, okay, is this because of something I'm doing? Is my angle not quite right? Am I not getting there fast enough? Where's the help defender? Those types of things. So really map out, I suppose, where the shortcomings are. And there are some things you can't control. You spoke about it before, Zoe. Sometimes they hit the circus shot and you're just going to sit there and say, hey, well, yeah, so it happened. Like, you're not getting it back now. Move on, make the next one, those types of things. So you do have to try and be a little bit careful there too, that you're not – and I think we've potentially all been guilty of it. Hey, if you close this player down, we'll win this game. Mm-hmm. And that player just feels all the pressure of, well, if we lose, it's because I didn't shut down this. I don't know. It's a team game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Collectively, we have to do a good job. You'll come out at some stage, those types of things. I think it's we can, as you say, wind them up a little bit too much at times. You just need to know your personalities of your players in that space. What about the trash talkers? I'm going to go to you, Coops, first. read into that what you will. But how do you play against the talking player that is constantly like flexing and drawing and constantly sort of at you and aggravating?
It's funny you say that because I hated trash talkers when I was playing. I thought they were scum of the earth. I thought, really? Like, this is the way that you're going to go about it? Like, I thought it was such poor behaviour.
And now he's come around to it and he endorses all the coaches where he's going with this.
And that's how I coach. I'm just at the other coach the whole time now. No, it was something I just thought, I didn't need to be said. And particularly, like, if you weren't, like, elite, like, if you weren't, like, the best player that ever been, you weren't allowed to talk. And so, for me, it was very much like, oh, okay, here's another clown who wants to talk. I'm just going to let my game speak for itself and just really enjoy ignoring this person to the point where I was being, like, a little bit cheeky and smug about it. Like pretend I'm listening, but then like walk past or like, you know, get up close and then like, you know.
The mental mind games that Coops invested in from a young age.
And then just go and hoop. Then just go and hoop and, you know, maybe, you know, score on them and flash a smile or something like that. But just for me, I was able to, I guess, maybe compartmentalize it in my head to say that if they're talking, they're obviously needing to compensate for something. And that talking was a weakness and that I was just going to allow my game to be able to, squash that.
Yeah, and there are plenty of players out there that talk because they want the interaction because that gets them going.
Yes.
It's almost like if I've been a bit flat, I'm going to start up and then all of a sudden someone comes back at me and it's like, great, now I've got something to motivate me. I remember seeing an interview once with Kevin Garnett, like, who was the hardest guard that you had in the league? He's like, Tim Duncan, like, near on impossible. Because everyone else, I could just get in their heads. I could talk to them to a point where it's just like, yeah, I'm going to see, oh, you know, you went to the left that time. That's interesting. Yeah, okay. Geez, I don't know that you got that shot going to your right. Like, he'd just be into them constantly. He's like, didn't matter. Duncan just wouldn't engage.
Yeah.
And then he'd just turn around and bank a shot from the mid-post. And it's just like, oh, I'm out. He's like, I had nothing for it. He's like, they were the hardest ones to match up on, the ones that just sat there and said nothing to you. Like, you had no read for what they were going through.
Gee, I mean, how would we classify acting that way? Stoic?
Oh, jeez.
You need a stoic button.
I don't know what it would be. Like, would it be like monks chanting in the background or something like that? Like, I'll work on it. By the time we come back to a new pod, Coops, and you're in, I will have a button for it. I don't know what it's going to look like. It might...
Chicken, chicken, yeah!
Might be that. Like, who knows? Zoe, dealing with the trash talker, how would you go about it?
Yeah, well, bad players talk trash. Talking trash comes from insecurity. So there's something they're trying to hide and they're trying to make up for it with trash talk. So I didn't have as much of it in the women's game when I was playing. Like, it wasn't overly prevalent. But one of the things that was really important was similar to what Coop said, just the only thing that helps them is you engaging in it. Like, they're looking, like you said, Rob, they're looking for motivation. They're looking for you to say something that they can then use on you and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Ignoring them, smiling at them, asking them if they're okay.
Good one.
Like, are you okay? Like, that's a real, it's really disarming. but mostly try and not engage. I've only done that once and it was an absolute ripper though. But... It is, it's also, take it as a sign of respect because people don't trash talk bad players because they don't need to. So if someone's coming at you, well, hey, I must mean something to this game. That's awesome. So take it as a sign of respect, and that helps you to ignore them as well.
Yep, I would obviously endorse players and coaches out there. Do not allow your players to do it. They look like fools more often than not.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
it is one of those areas where you stick a three and you start flexing on someone and letting everyone know about it, you better get a stop the next possession, because if you just give it straight back, there's probably a sub coming. You got to be real careful in that space. So, and it is, of course, one of those you never know who's watching moments. Like, I know, Coops, I sent you a message halfway through last year. It was obviously the game on a Friday night. It's like, hey, is this one of your kids? Mm. Because there's some stuff going on here that's not fantastic. It's like, yep, no worries. I'll deal with him. Cool. We're good.
Yeah.
You got to be careful, because that is straight away something that jumps off the court as, hey, I don't love what this looks like. Whereas if all of a sudden you stick, you know, back-to-back buckets, it's like, gee, that's pretty good. Hey, Coops, is this one of your kids? Because they're going pretty well. You never really know. Coaches talk. It's really easy to find out who's who and who's doing the right thing and who's not necessarily doing the right thing in that world.
Oh, I get one of those a month on both sides. Hey, this kid, have you seen this kid? Are they doing really well? And another one like that. Hey, I saw this kid get a tech or whatever it may be. So, yeah, I couldn't re-emphasize that enough about you never know who's watching.
Yep. Bouncing back after a bad one. We'll go to you on this one, Zoe.
I'm shocked.
I don't know. We have been taking it in turns, to be completely fair with you.
I'm kidding.
How do you bounce back after a bad one, in particular, and if it's like a tournament type situation? So it might be like country champs or like preseason tournaments. They've had a bad one. How do you get them back up again quickly? What does the player have to go through in that space? Like, how would you dissect it all for them?
Yeah, so it's really important you learn the lessons and then move on. It's got to be quick. And that's easier said than done, because kids like to stew on things. So, you know, it's really important you sit down with them, reflect on the game, where we could have done better, you know, watch some film if you can. And then it's, okay, by the time we walk out of this room, that's it. That game is done. And now we are moving on to, if it's later in the day or the next day or whenever the next game is. But I think, again, it's a similar thing though, too, I think, depending on the level, the age, I think we make more of it than they do sometimes. I think things like nationals, it's got to be done. You've got to have that review and allow them to move on, because there's a lot more pressure in that environment. But, you know, something like the Australia Day tournament or, you know, the Classic, or even though the Classic is important to some, it's at the end of the day, like, I don't know who won it last year. I can't remember. So it's, you know, it's really good. They're really good practice environments for those things of to, hey, this and this, have that discussion. All right, now, as soon as you walk through, and make it sort of a visual thing, as soon as you walk through that door, as soon as you get up off your seat, as soon as you, something that's a doing, because it means you can leave something behind, then we're moving on. And we're on to the next game, and we're focused. Our sole focus is on that.
Yep, I've seen coaches previously have their players obviously do a little bit of a journal after a game on,
yeah,
you know, three things that you did really well, three things you want to work on, and their trigger for letting it go was the click of the pen. So they had the four pen, yep, and it's like once they snapped it off, I'm done.
Yep.
And I'm not thinking about it anymore. It's all written down where I can go and review it if I need to, but this is how I move on from here. What have you used, Coops? If the one of the first 10 words out of your mouth is not stoicism, I'm going to be bitterly disappointed.
I definitely can't lie. It's helped. but, you know, a lot of this is experience too.
Mm.
You know, it's especially if you're coming from, you know, a place of competitiveness, if you're naturally a competitive person. And, you know, we ask the question a lot to players and coaches around, you know, do you love winning or hate losing? And, you know, just...
Hate losing.
Yeah, yeah, same, right? Yeah. So...
In case anyone was wondering.
Yeah. So if you get to that point of, you know, just understanding kind of who you are and how you're going to relate to that, then, you know, you've just got to go through those experiences of, you know, how do I best deal with it? But we had Ben Caruana, who was our assistant coach for the Navy team at under 20 nationals. Shout out to Ben, who did an outstanding job. We were getting lunch one day and he asked Darren and myself, he's like, God, how do you guys move past losses so quickly? He's like, they really stick with me. And that was the first answer, was experience. Like, especially me, over the last few years, I've lost quite a lot of games. and so, you know, you go through that. But I think what you guys were talking about is so important, is that when you can really quickly and cleverly extract the learning from the poor performance, it's easier to move on. If you're stewing about it and you're just thinking about it, you know, you're not watching the film, you're not writing things down, you're just letting it swirl around your head, then it's just going to stay with you. But if you can sit down and watch the film, you can write those few things down and say, and really identify, here's where we went wrong, here's some solutions to fix it going forward, then I can click the pen or walk through the door and do that. And yeah, with teams, that's exactly what we would do. I think, you know, there was the Adelaide Crows a number of years back. They had a 24-hour rule. I think it was, you know, they take an L, they could be mad for 24 hours, but when that clock ticked over, they started a new week and they were moving forward. So it's just going through those processes and understanding it's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen.
Well, and part of it too is it's a great little tagline. Yeah,
is that Pantene?
Vidal Sassoon.
Oh, Vidal Sassoon. Oh, apologies.
Well, I can't tell you the last year I actually bought hair products, so consequently I'm zero help to both of you. But it is one of those things too. I think on the review you can look back and it's like, well, did I play poorly because my preparation wasn't good? Did we walk into the gym 30 seconds before tip-off, in which case that impacted? Was it something that I did during the game? Those types of things too. And we spoke a little bit about the preparation before a game last week, but that's something that can actually make a big difference, where it's like, hey, shake this off. I've just been sitting in a car for 2 hours. We lobbed in literally 5 minutes before the tip. What did I really expect was going to happen here? That can actually, it's not making an excuse, but it might be a reason. And that's the hard part, is delineating between the excuse and the reason in that space. You don't want to make excuses for it, but there are reasons that things happen in certain things too. So you do have to be a bit careful.
Something that's really powerful in that space though is to also be able to show them there will be some good in the game. Nobody steps on the floor and is terrible in every single possession. They do every athlete does something good in every game. So a really powerful part is to be able to, if you're watching film, if you've got that luxury, is to show them those as well, to say, okay, we've spent time talking about all the things you want to fix. Now have a look at the ways you actually did contribute to this game. And so, because it's one of those things I say to the athletes all the time, tell me some of the feedback that you personally got throughout practice, and they tell you all the things they did wrong. And I'll say, okay, tell me some of the positive feedback you got throughout, and they can't remember it. And it's something we've got to flip that a little bit. I'm not saying ignore the things that they need to fix. Of course, we've got to identify it and be able to talk about it. But they also need to be okay and feel comfortable, girls in particular, saying, I did this well. Like, I was good at this tonight. You know, and that might help if we can get better at that mindset. That might help when we don't have such a good game, be able to move on from it, because it's, well, no, I know I can say, I know I'm a great defender. I know I can do that in the next game, you know, or be shown that film of, oh, that felt worse than it looked, you know, because that can happen too. Maybe it wasn't so bad. Yes, I've still got to work on these things, but maybe it wasn't so bad. So it just pulls them out of that I guess, negative mindset a little bit quicker.
Yep. The author and speaker, John Gordon, who's done some fantastic stuff for coaches, if you're interested, like the Energy Bus, probably one of the biggest ones. He's got some really good literature and strategies around that, the power of positivity. So if anyone wants to look that up, recommend.
Coop's just dropping in a second pot, like book review, like before you've even...
He just wants to hear the intro again.
Yeah, unbelievable. That's all right. All right, next question was, how do they deal with success and not getting too high on that success, but also how do they deal with the pressure to be good in that world? So we'll go to Coop's on this one because it's his turn.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Really good question. I think you've got to start with perceptions, and you've got to start with expectations. You know, having a clear understanding around, you know, what success means to you, What does failure mean to you? What does success look like? What does failure look like? You know, being able to not get too high when you have success, in understanding that it can be taken away from you really quickly. So that that ability to look inside the success and find the joy around the things that are important to you with that. Like, it might be, you know, winning because you love celebrating with your teammates, and that you got to do that on that Friday night or that Saturday afternoon, whatever it may be, and really embrace that. But then know that, you know, it's not always going to happen. So, you know, how do I get back to work and make sure I do everything in my power to try and make it happen again? And then again, with the failure, is failure doesn't last forever, you know. So again, like what Zoe said earlier, you know, find some things, write them down in my journal, go away and work on them, and do everything in my power to bring myself back to finding the success that I need. So it's hard, especially for young people who are really, you know, going through, you know, the biggest changes of their life, and, you know, their brains are developing and hormones and all those sorts of things. So I think as with us as coaches to help them, and I know I say this a lot on the pod, but giving them some exercises around self-awareness, giving them some exercises in being able to break down what those things look like, and then strategies to deal with them as well, is only going to be beneficial, rather than just saying, you know, oh, you know, let's make sure we win next week, or, oh, you know, don't worry about that poor performance, it'll be right. you know, we've just got to keep going that little bit deeper and support them as best we can.
Yep. I think it's one of those awareness pieces too, is, okay, you might be a great player, but are you a great player because you play with a great big that gets you open off a pick and roll? Or are you a great big because you play with a cerebral point guard that can find you in various places too? So understanding why you are potentially good, and, okay, what if you're not playing with that player anymore? Do you have those cohesion problems that everyone sort of has, with the teething problems coming into a new team? Those types of things too, and just unpack it a little bit. So it's not so much if I'm not good, my team will lose. Okay, we'll understand what makes you good and how you can get to that point. Is it the offense? In which case, go and thank you, coach. Players, always go and thank you, coach. Is it, like I said, good screener, whatever the case may be, but understanding, I'm really big, and it sounds real minor, but I'm really big on acknowledging the passer, off an assist. Like, it's great that you got to a position where you can score, but you got to give a little bit of love to the person that got you the ball on that one in particular, especially if they find you on the charge circle. Like, there's no excuse to not acknowledge that thing. And straight away, it's like, well, you know, are you just wrapped you scored 2 points, or are you wrapped that the team scored 2 points, and are you happy for the person that threw the pass as well?
That's so good. I love that. I can't remember which college coach I stole it from. I think I was coaching under 18 Sandringham at the time when I heard it, and we were seeing that a little bit. So at practice, if you didn't point to the person who passed you the ball after a score within like the first like 1 or 2 seconds, the score didn't count. And it was really like the guys started to enjoy it, because if they didn't do it, and then it'd be like, no score, and oh, no. Yeah,
quite happy to snitch on each other when it happened, if it got them a stop defensively.
But then obviously it started working, and, you know, and what a fun and a way to try to organically create a little bit more of a team culture. But I think that's a really, really great example and a fun way to try and get players to think a little bit more beyond themselves.
Yep. What about you, Zoe? What have you sort of used to just – not keep people grounded, but at least deal with the pressure of being good in that space and still celebrate their success? Because we know on the women's side, they are very insular with a lot of players in that sort of space, but the boys are very outward emotional.
But it's the same on the boys' side too, because for them, we live in Australia and we have
geography,
tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah.
Like we're just ready to just cut people down, and anybody that shows any type of pride in what they've done, we'll find every reason as to why they shouldn't. So it does happen on the boys' side too, but I think it affects girls probably a little bit more. But my biggest thing is I always make the athletes that I'm working with outwardly say that they're proud of something that they've done. They've got to get okay with that. You know, you look at Caitlin Clark, do you think she cares at all about what anyone thinks or says about her and her success. She knows she's good and she owns it. I love every minute of it.
You cannot shoot with that level of just lack of care about if it goes in or not and not be okay with how good you are.
Yeah, she is. But the amount of times I hear, oh, she's so like up herself and she's this and she's that. No, she is a competitor. She is an elite athlete and she's going places. So, you know, it may not be within your personality to show those sort of things or be like, and that's fine too, but you have to be able to acknowledge your successes and be able to say, hey, I am good at this. To keep it from going to a place where it becomes detrimental is gratitude. You're grateful that you get to play this game. You're grateful that people give up their time to help you and to make you better. You're great, like you were saying, Rob, I'm grateful to the point guard who finds me where I want the ball, when I want the ball. You know, I'm grateful to my parents who not only pay for me to do all of this, but they drive me all over the countryside 8 days a week, 13 months a year. I'm grateful that I've got friends that support me because I often miss school events and parties and things like that because I'm either playing or getting ready to play or I have practice the next morning or all those sort of things. So, you know, I think bringing things back to a place of gratitude is how you stop it from getting to a negative place. But with the young female athletes I'm working with at the moment, I'd probably take a little bit of negative pride, I guess, because you can always bring it back. But we've got to, you know, I just want to see that confidence in themselves and that willingness to say I'm good at this.
Yep. And it gets harder as they get younger too, because you want them to obviously model themselves on better behaviour rather than bad behaviour.
Yeah.
But I mean, talking for the Saturday sessions that happened last year, if you brought any of the young kids in, they would immediately be real quiet. Like, hold on, there's only one or two of you in your entire age group at this session. You're obviously pretty good. Be pretty good. But it really is. You've got to draw it out of a lot of people in that as they're earlier. As they get older, they tend to care less. There's a very technical term for that, which I won't use on the pod because I like to bleep myself out. But it is one of those areas where they have to be okay with being good. It's not a bad thing. Well, it's not arrogance. It's confidence.
And finding people that have that. So that's one of the brilliant things about the Saturday sessions was having those younger athletes around Asha Nightingale, because she is one of the greatest leaders that we've had come through the program, and she knows she's good at things. Like, she knows she's got to work on some things, but she knows what she's good at. And she's you can see in the way she's confident, the way she attacks training, attacks games and everything off court, that she has to, you know, you just know. And every team or every club probably has one of those. And if you're struggling with an athlete with sort of a bit of inability to acknowledge their successes, because you'll see it in girls all the time. Let's say they make a state team and somebody says, oh, congratulations for making the state team. They go, oh, yeah, thanks. And they'll just almost dismiss it. Or they'll tell you something negative about something that happened. Oh, yeah, well, we lost on Friday. Like, just bringing it back to something. Trying to almost get in before you can, if that makes sense. So I think if we see that as a collective, we've got to try and turn that around a little bit.
And big shout out to Asha Nightingale, who was just signed at Davidson or committed to Davidson. Obviously, a long time Talking Split listener, one of the OGs, James Jansen, is an assistant coach out there as well. But one of my favourite Asha memories of all time was she was running a little bit late and she sent through the message saying, hey, look, I'll be there. I'm just going to be five or so late. We've hit traffic. And the babies were on the court. I'd say babies, 14s, 15s, 16s, and they were running through some offense and it wasn't quite working as it was supposed to work, and she's walked in with backpack and slides and just started fixing it straight away for them. No, that's not what's supposed to happen. This is supposed to be over here. Remember, you need to hold your cut over there. Wait until the ball gets to that point before you go. And it's just like, oh, never leave.
That's what I said to her. I'm like, you're not allowed to graduate. You're going to be here. You'll be 35, still coming to these sessions.
But that's the cool stuff, is you want behavior you can model the next generation of players on. Yeah. I think that's a really important one that we could do a lot more in this space with our players. I think it's key.
I think everybody needs to remember, players and coaches and just people in general, like, if you're going to be your biggest critic, you've got to be your biggest fan as well. Like, you can't just keep beating yourself up over the negatives that you see. You've got to find those moments of gratitude. You've got to find those moments of positivity, those moments of self-belief to balance out the scales.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. All right, that does wrap us up from the question and answer part. Ladies and gentlemen, strap in. Get comfortable. Take the shoes off. Put the Crocs on. All the charms. Coops, Crocs head coach.
Ah, ooh, yep. I didn't know that.
And this is the link. It's book club time with Nathan Cooper Brown.
I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Coops, welcome to the book club.
Rob, how did you get this big leather armchair and warm crackling fire in here so quickly?
It's just on the screen. I'll see if I can get that done next week for you.
We've just relocated to the old gauge room.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a crackling fire. Yeah. It's just that hot in here. It's actually chilly in here today. I don't know what's happened. Yeah. But Coops, you're on. Book club time.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be book club with Coops without a stoicism book reference, would it? So I've got a couple of books on the go at the moment. The Daily Stoic, and also Seneca's Letters to Lucilius, which I'm kind of making my way through. But one of my most recent finishes, and I think I'm on my second read, is Meditations, Marcus Aurelius. I have the Gregory Hayes edition, so there's a bunch of different like translations. Obviously, it was written about 2,000 years ago in Greek and then translated to Latin and so on down the line. So there's obviously different co-authors that have provided their own translations, but that one was recommended to me, and it's an incredible book. It starts with a prologue where you get a bit of an idea of who Marcus was and how he grew up and what Stoicism is and how it relates to him. And then it goes into the actual book. And what it is, it was basically his journal. So it wasn't written for anybody. It wasn't supposed to be read by anyone. It was literally his own thoughts, him writing in his journal. He did, from history tells us, he did most of it whilst on the battlefront by the Danube River. I think at one point it was in Budapest, or what is now Budapest. And for anyone who's a fan of the movie Gladiator, there's a scene where Marcus is pictured sitting writing in his journal before Maximus comes into the room, and that's obviously a bit of an ode to him writing Meditations. But one of the best things about the book is because it's not a start to finish read. It's more a bit of a, I don't like the term self-help book, but it kind of is like that, that you can kind of dive into it at any point, and it just has these incredible reflections of this man who had unbelievable power, like, you know, and had a position that doesn't translate much anymore, but the power that he wielded to be sitting there and talking to himself and holding himself accountable and reflecting on, you know, not being angry, you know, when he didn't need to be, or not judging people when he didn't need to be, or one of his quotes is, you know, be strict with yourself and be tolerant with others. Like, he just, to think about this man at this time and what he was dealing with, to still prioritize compassion and kindness, and to really ponder around his own death and how that's, you know, how that related to living his best life and so on, is it's really powerful. It's changed my life. And obviously, you know, we joke and I talk a lot about Stoicism on the pod, but it's something that has really affected me, you know, in a lot of ways. And, you know, we were talking about before about, you know, what people think of you. And there's another Marcus quote from Meditations that says, you know, the tranquility that comes when you stop worrying about what they do and they say and they think and only what you do. And you know, when we think about the space that we live in basketball and being judged and things like that, to stay true to yourself, to stay authentic and be tranquil in happy in who you are, is pretty powerful. So it's an incredible book. Shout out to Hayden Kirkwood, Darcy Thornton, Dylan Cole, who have all decided to jump in and start reading it. I know there's some other coaches around that have also decided to give it a crack, but I highly recommend it. And for anyone who has read it or starts reading it, I look forward to plenty of good discussions on it.
And there is, it's a phenomenal read. I know Jack Fleming got me on it a while back as well. He'd sort of seen it first and said, look, this might be worth a read. And to be fair, I've sort of jumped in and out of the book. Like, I haven't gone from cover to cover by any means, but the Ryan Holiday podcast, The Daily Stoic, is obviously a little bit of a must listen for people out there as well. Not that we promote other podcasts, but, you know, I would recommend going and listening to that one because it is quite good. I don't normally do the hour-long ones where he sort of sits down and chats with someone, but I normally do the quick little ones in between. It's just a little bit of a, okay, wake up. This is what we're thinking about today. Where does this put me mentally? Those types of things. I think it is really valuable. And it has been more and more of a thing with sports people of late. Obviously, Jack McVay has been really prominent in that space. For those of you that are listening from the NBL world and aware of that competition in particular, he speaks about it a lot, and you just see the joy that he plays with and how he lives his life. And I think, what was it, last year we went to one of the Boomers training sessions, and within 15 seconds of walking into the joint, you could see and hear McVay all over the place. Like, he was just out there.
Yeah.
Like, but it was so much fun. And even the course we're in on the weekend, one of the coaches, give me 10 Jack McVays. And it's like, yeah, it can be, you know, really life-changing if you want to put some time into it. And it is one of those things that it's not for everyone, and I completely get that too. But it is definitely worth a little bit of a look. And because there are so many different translations, there are so many different ways that you can interpret and read what has been written in that space. So it is not a one-size-fits-all approach by any means, but it is certainly one of those ones that you'll take out of it what you put into it, I think, for mine. And I think Ryan's out here, I'll say August off the top of my head. Yeah,
August 18th, I think. Yep. And surprise, surprise, we're all going.
We are all going. But big thanks, Coos, for jumping in on Book Club for this week. I don't have an outro for that other than me saying good job.
Cheers. Like,
it's, coaches, thank you very much once again for listening to the podcast. We'll catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.